let's start with a verse. Vayo jirnam hadik tadapi nahi jirno madhavava shatam charmanghevyas tadapi nahi raga shataiva radhashir nashir nas tadapi nahi moha katamayam janakkhungsara tesh charana kamalayas prihayatu. This is a verse from the Alankara Kaustubha, one of Kavi Karnapur's works, in which he describes the shanta rasa, the sentiment of shanta, of tranquility. And vayojirnam hadik is phi, something like that. Phi, their youth has been spoiled, kind of passed away, something like that. But condition of passion has not passed away. Shatam charmanghevyas, their pieces of their skin hang loosely on their body. Tadapi nahi raga shlataiva, but it seems that their passion has not slackened, and it's kind of as strong as ever. Radha shirinas, their teeth are broken. Shirinas tadapi nahi moha katamayam, but how is it that their illusion has not broken, has not fallen apart? Janak kamsara tesh charana kamalayas prihayatu. If only these people could long for the feet, the lotus feet of Kamsa's enemy, which is Krishna. The verse is very interesting because it kind of echoes a verse from Bhartrihari, from his Vairagya Shataka.
Also Shankaracharya's
Bhartrihari has this verse. How does it go? Bhogana bhukta vayameva bhukta. Enjoyment, we have not enjoyed anything, but we have been enjoyed. Tapona tapta vayameva tapta. That we have not performed any tapas, but we ourselves have been burnt. Kalona yato vayameva yata. That time has not passed, but we just have passed on. So it's a very similar idea, that something has happened in the real world, like our age has passed away, and yet our illusion has not passed away. Our teeth are broken, and yet our illusion is not broken. It's kind of this contrast is both in this verse and Bhartrihari has been used. The main difference between Bhartrihari and Kavi Karnapura is the last line here. Janakkhungsara tesh charana kamalayas prihayatu. Kavi Karnapura ends on something else. He doesn't just say, well, this is happening, but he has this strong desire, this strong passion that if only they could long for the lotus feet of Krishna, then their problems would be solved. So today we'll talk about renunciation. Now, just kind of to start a bit broader, renunciation is, of course, a very big theme in Indian religions. We find it in basically every school. There's some form of renunciation there. Those who follow the path of karma, they have some type of renunciation. There's renunciation involved in particular sacrifices, that you have to renounce certain things to perform a sacrifice. You also have to renounce the fruits of your action. You just do it as a duty, and renounce the fruits of the action. But renunciation becomes really strong, of course, in the jnana-oriented traditions, of which I'll use Advaita Vedanta as one of the prime examples. So there we see that the underlying premise is that action leads to suffering, leads to entanglement in this world, so therefore you cease action in whatever way you conceive that, and you cultivate jnana, knowledge, and then that's the way to liberation. So we have two aspects here, jnana and vairagya, renunciation and gnosis or knowledge. And both kind of feed into each other, as we'll see later on. The bhakti traditions, of which Kavi Karnapura is an example, They have a different conception. They're unlike the karma worldview, where everything is basically directed to this world. It's a world-affirming philosophy and form of religion. The Jnana school is more kind of a school aiming for transcendence, and that becomes their prime object. But then in the Bhakti school, we kind of see as some sort of a synthesis of both paths. It's very much an action-oriented school. There's lots of action going on, but the goal is also transcendence, but then a very personalistic transcendence. In that school, in those schools, vairagya or renunciation is very different. It is not something that has to be cultivated on its own. That's what's often said. But it is kind of a process. If you follow the path of bhakti, then automatically renunciation will come about. We see that in this verse. Kavi Karnapur criticizes people because their body is decaying, and yet their illusion and their passion has not diminished. But what is his solution? If only they could do that, if only they could long for Krishna's feet, then all the problems would be solved. So it's a very much kind of the solution, according to him, is bhakti, is devotion. So in this talk we'll talk about Kavi Karnapur and his conception of renunciation. So who is he? That's his full name, if you want, and that's up there. He's born at his birth. He got the name Paramananda Das, and then later on he got the title Kavi Karnapur, the ear ornament of poets. And there's a lot of there's very little known about Kavi Karnapur, about his life. We know practically nothing except three small stories which all happen in his childhood. So beyond the age of seven, we don't really know what happened to Kavi Karnapur, where he lived, and so on. But one of the most famous stories is kind of nicely phrased in this verse of Vishwanatha Chakravarti. This is the opening verse to his commentary on one of Kavi Karnapur's works, and he says, "Vatsa swajamuhu swayara sanaya prapaya satkavyatam deyam bhakta janeshu bhavishu surair dush prapyameta tvaya ityagya payadeva yena nidhade shri karnapuranane balye swangridalam ritam gatirasau chetanna chandrostuna." So he who placed the nectar of his own toe in the mouth of Sri Karnapura and commanded. The incident that he's referred to, the story goes that one day the child Paramananda Das was brought before Chaitanya, and the child crawled up to Chaitanya and took his toe and put it in his mouth and started sucking on the toe of Chaitanya. And so he who placed the nectar of his own toe in the mouth of Sri Karnapura and commanded, "O child, now that you have obtained the nature of a true poem and have enjoined it incessantly with your own tongue, give this, which is rarely obtained even by the gods, to the future devotees. May that Chaitanya Chandra be our destination." So the idea, tradition sees that by sucking the toe of Chaitanya, who tradition sees as the Supreme Lord himself, that small child became kind of empowered to compose poetry. And then the second story that is told about him is at some other point, again the child came before Chaitanya, and Chaitanya said, say something, and then the child, he was only 6 years old, and then he recites this beautiful verse in the Arya meter, Shravaso Kuvalayam Akshino Ranjanam Uraso Mahendra Manidaman Rinnavana Ramaninam Akhilam Harichayati, that he's the ear ornament, he's the blue lotus flower behind their ears, he's the coal on their eyes, Uraso Mahendra Manidam, and he's the the necklace sapphires around on their chest, and then it says, Hari Jayati, all glories to Hari, who is truly all the ornaments of the women of Vrindavan. So he composed this very beautiful verse, and then tradition has that then he got the title Kavi Karnapura, the ear ornament of poets, that he was the best of all the poets. So he wrote a number of works which fall roughly, you could say, in two categories. There's works on Chaitanya and more autobiographical, biographical works, and he wrote other works which are about Krishna and about the life of Krishna and his activities in Vrindavan. So this is the first work he wrote at a very early age. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Mahakavya is entirely written in Sanskrit. It's one of the earlier biographies of Chaitanya. The second one we'll talk about today is Sri Chaitanya Chandrodaya Nataka. I have this one here, just so you get an idea how big it is. It's a nataka, it's a drama. It's a dramatized version of Chaitanya's life. We'll talk more about it later. He wrote Sri Gaura Ganadesha Deepika, a light on the retinue of Gaura, of Chaitanya, which is basically where he describes all the followers of Chaitanya. It's a fairly short work. His main work is Sri Ananda Vrindavana Champu, which is fairly big. It's this one. It's a champu. It's poetry, both a combination of verse and prose, where both are used equally for the same purposes. So it's the champu of Vrindavan, which is bliss, of the blissful Vrindavan, which is all about Krishna's activities in Vrindavan. Then he wrote another work, Sri Krishnafrika Kaumudi, the light on the daily activities of Krishna, which describes the activities of Krishna from morning to eve till night. It's a shorter work. It's this one. Very, very sweet verses. In this work he kind of he's very good in very light in writing light verses. Very charming and very. Melodious. He's very good at that in there. Then he writes Sri Alankara Kastava, which is a work on poetics. This is one of the main works of my thesis, in which he analyzes the aspects of poetry in all its detail. And then there's a last work, Arya Shataka, which is attributed to him. It's a very short work. It's 100 verses written in the Arya meter. There's some doubt whether this is really his work. There's only very few manuscripts that survived of it, and this has been published on the basis of two or three manuscripts, and there's a lot of gaps in it and so on, but that's another work that's ascribed to him. So the Sri Chaitanya Chandrodaya Nataka, as the title suggests, it says Nataka, the drama of the Udaya, the rise of the moon, that is Chaitanya. It's a nataka, which means it is as Sanskrit drama is. It's written both in verse and in prose. The main dialogues will be written in prose, and then verses are kind of interspersed in it to kind of describe something more poetically. It has 10 acts, like a nataka should have. It is somewhat unusual for a nataka, because a nataka, according to the tradition, is generally taken from the plot of the story. Is generally taken from traditional accounts, from the Mahabharata, Ramayana, or something like that. He takes a very contemporary figure, Chaitanya, and writes about him and about his life. And many of the persons who occur in the drama were actually still alive when he wrote the drama, so that's somewhat unusual. Some of you who might know something about history of Sanskrit literature, the title might sound a bit familiar. there's a work called Prabodha Chandradaya, the rise of the moon, that is Prabodha. How would you say it, Prabodha?
Enlightenment.
Enlightenment, yeah, something like that. Which was written in the late 11th, early 12th century by a person called Krishna Mishra. The drama is entirely allegorical. Tradition says that this person, who was a renounced Vedantin, he wrote the work because he had a disciple who was not really interested in Vedanta but was loved poetry a lot. So he thought, let me write a drama and kind of explaining Vedanta in a dramatic form, then his disciple will still have some education. Kavikarnapura takes more than just a title from that work. There's some passages which are a bit similar to the Prabodha Chandradaya, and also, as we'll see, he has some allegorical characters in the drama, which function mainly to give a theological comment on what's going on, but also they act as narrators. They will often kind of say what the characters in the drama are doing. So, renunciation in the Chaitanya Chandradaya, of course, it's a devotional text, so we'll see devotional forms of renunciation. I mentioned briefly about the kind of the Vedantic attitude to renunciation, where it is seen as very essential to it, and how it is always coupled with jnana, with knowledge. We see that very well in, for example, the traditional role of a sannyasi, of a renounced person, that they practice vairagya, they practice renunciation, but they also spend a lot of time studying Vedanta. and meditating on the Mahavakyas, the main statements of the Upanishads, according to Shankara. In the Chaitanya Chandradaya, we find a lot of glorification of renunciation. A number of followers of Chaitanya were actually sannyasis themselves. We have Swarup Damodar, who is one of the most intimate associates of Chaitanya, and praised extensively, very highly in the Chaitanya Chandradaya. He's a sannyasi. We have Paramananda Puri, who is equally, Kavikarnapura got his name from that person, Paramananda Puri. So he's also a sannyasi, highly praised. There's Brahmananda Bharati. And then there's another person, a very close associate of Chaitanya, Nityananda, who's kind of a bit of a... it's unclear whether he was really a sannyasi. In the text, he's identified as a sannyasi, but there's some doubt whether he was really a sannyasi or not. So we have these devotees who are renouncers and very highly praised. And their renunciation is also glorified. We find renunciation is a very good thing for them. There's, for example, a devotee called Raghunath Das, who's very young, but he's praised as Vairagyaika Nidhi, as an ocean of only renunciation. That's all he has. That's, you know, his entire being is renunciation. And that's seen as a very good thing, but we'll see. It's a bit more complex than that. How it exactly works. So here's some excerpts from the drama. This is about Swarup Damodar, who is a sannyasi, and at some point Chaitanya, he's living in Puri, in Orissa, and Swarup Damodar arrives there, and then Gopinath, who is another character in the drama, he'll come back later on. He sees Swarup Damodar and he says, "Oh, I have heard of him. It is Swarup Damodar, the disciple of Chaitanya Ananda, who is a sannyasi in Benares, who is the most renounced devotee of the Lord and very learned. Although repeatedly asked by his guru to study and teach Vedanta, he does not do so." So here we have this interesting description. Swarup Damodar is a disciple of Chaitanyananda. He's a disciple of a very respected Advaitin Sannyasi. He's extremely renounced and he's very, very learned, and therefore his guru asked him, okay, you should study Vedanta and teach Vedanta to others, and yet he doesn't do that. And he's kind of praised for that in this passage, that yes, he's so renounced and he's so learned, and his guru asked him to teach Vedanta, but still he says, you know, I don't do it. So then why does he take sannyas, one may ask. So Gopinathacharya continues, Samastaha naya turiya mashramam jagraha vairagya vashena kevalam Shri Krishna padabja paraga ragatas tuchi chakarainam aho vahanapi. That samastaha naya, to renounce everything, turiya mashramam jagraha, he has taken the fourth ashrama, the sannyasa ashram, vairagya vashena kevalam, with the power of vairagya. He has this strong sense of renunciation, so therefore he has taken that fourth ashram, sannyas. Shri Krishna padabja paraga ragatas, but by his strong passion for the pollen, paraga is the pollen of the lotus feet of Shri Krishna, by that strong passion for the Krishna's feet, tuchi chakara enam, he has made insignificant this Turiya ashrama, this fourth ashrama, ahovahanapi, although he still wears it. So he's a sannyasi. He's a sannyasi, and he's taken sannyas because he's so renounced. But by his strong devotion for Krishna, he kind of made this renunciation totally insignificant. This fourth ashrama is totally insignificant, but still he kind of holds on to it. So we see again, renunciation is kind of praised, that because he's such strong renunciation, he has taken sannyas, but then it's kind of something else is placed above it because of his strong devotion. And although he has such strong renunciation, his devotion is so much greater that this renunciation is like totally insignificant. It's like can be brushed aside practically. Another devotee which is praised for his extreme renunciation is Sanatan Goswami, who was a minister in the court of the Muslim ruler of Bengal, and then renounces his position, renounces all his wealth, and goes to Vrindavan, where he lives as a mendicant. And this is from the ninth act, where it's described how Chaitanya meets Sanatan, so this is a description of Sanatan Goswami. Gaudendrasya sabhavi bhoshana manistyaktaya riddham shriyam rupasya agraja esha eva tarunim vairagya lakshmim dadhe antar bhakti rasena purna hridayo bahye vadhuta kriti shaivalai pihitam mahasaraiva priti pradastad vidam. Rupa Syagraja, the younger brother of Rupa, that's the brother of Sanatan, or the elder brother, sorry, of Rupa, who is money, who is a jewel of the ornaments of the court of the ruler of Bengal. Chaktva, he has given up Ridham Shriyam, extensive wealth. So why did he, what did he do then? And Dadhe, he accepted Tarunim Vairagya Lakshmim. He accepted the very youthful goddess of renunciation. So he's given up all this wealth, but then he gets something else in return. So again, renunciation is very positive. It's a goddess, a youthful goddess. Antar bhakti rasena purna hridayo. His heart is filled with bhakti rasa, with devotional sentiments. So internally he's filled with his devotion. Bahye vadhuta kriti, and externally he looks like an avadhuta, someone who has given up everything, someone who has shaken off all social considerations. So externally he's very renounced. Internally he's like just entirely. Externally it's all renunciation. Internally it's all devotion. Shaivailai pihitam mahasaraiva priti pradastad vidam, and therefore he gives preeti, or affection to those like him, and he's compared to them. He's like a Mahasara, a great a pond, lake, which is covered by, I think it's called duckweed in English, like this green stuff, the
moss.
Moss kind of duckweed, kind of something like. So he looks like on the surface you just see this green stuff, but then you go in and then you find rasa, you find liquid, which is the bhakti, which is a devotion. So he's compared to that. So again, renunciation, a very good thing, a complementary thing to devotion. Externally, the renunciation is very good. Internally, bhakti is important. Now, as I mentioned, the Chaitanya Chandodaya is it has some allegorical figures in it. And the second act of the drama starts with renunciation. He appears on the scene and he starts lamenting. So let's hear what he has to say. This is the opening of the second act. Renunciation, looking around. Alas, the world is full of materialists. Na shaucham no satyam, na cha shamadamo na piniyamo, na shantir na kshanti, shiva shiva na maitri na cha daya. Aho me nirvyaja pranayi suhrido mi kalijane, kimun muli bhuta vidadhatikim agyata vasitam. So he looks around and he says, na shaucham, there is no cleanliness, na satyam, there is no truthfulness, na cha shamadamo, there is no control of the senses and of the mind. Nor are there any restrictions, regulations that are followed. Nashantir, there is no peace because of that. Nakshanti, there is no endurance, no tolerance. Shiva Shiva, alas, alas. Namaitri, there is no friendship. Nachadayan, there is no compassion. Ahome nirvyaja pranayi sukhrido, ami kalijane, kimun muli bhuta. Have my friends, which are pranay, which are affectionate, and nirvyaja, without duplicity. So all these people are friends of renunciation. So have they been uprooted by the people of Kali, by the servants of Kali, which is of this age, Kali Yuga? So have they been uprooted, or vidadhati kim agyata vasitam, and are they now hiding in a place which is unknown? So what happened to all these things? What happened to truthfulness? What happened to cleanliness? Control of the senses and all the mind. He looks all around and he doesn't see anything. He then goes on to lament that the brahmanas, the only thing they're interested in is their sixth duty. You know, they have to sacrifice and perform sacrifices for someone else. They have to study shastra and teach the shastra. They have to give in charity and they receive in charity. So he says, renunciation laments that the brahmanas nowadays are just interested in their sixth duty, receiving charity, and all the rest they've given up. And their only, the only sign of their status is their sacred threat. The kshatriyas, their only sole name, they cannot protect anyone. The vaishyas, they're like the bodhas, like the Buddhists, he says. And the shudras, they consider themselves extremely wise. They start teaching others and acting as gurus, although they're ignorant. Then he looks at the ashramas and complain and laments that the brahmacharis, the only reason they're brahmacharis is because they cannot get married. The grihastas, the only thing they're interested in is to fill the bellies of their wife and children. The vanaprastas, they're only so in name, they're not really vanaprastas. They don't live in the forest or anything like that. And the sannyasis, they're only different from all the other ashramas because they wear a different cloth. And that's the only difference between them. Then he wanders more around and then he sees some wise persons, some people who seem very wise, and then he laments their nayayikas, and they say from their birth on the only thing they hear are words like upadi, jati, anumiti and vyapti. They're all nyaya terms, so that's the only thing they hear. They don't want to hear anything about the Lord. They're not interested in that. They just want to hear upadi, jati, anumiti, vyapti. They consider the wisest person is he who is best in logic, and that's the wisest person, and their own speculations, that's their shastra, that's their scripture, so they don't care about anything else. Then he wanders further, and then he sees Advaitins, and then he laments and he says, ah, the only talk about God is as sanmatra, as the only existence, as nirvishesha, as unqualified, as upadi rahita, as devoid of upadis, of designations, nirvikalpa, inconceivable, niriha, and without action. And they always say, Brahmai vasmi, I am Brahman. By doing that, renunciation laments that they deny the Lord's Shakti, his inconceivable Shakti, which is an essential element in Chaitanya Vaishnava theology, and they shun devotion, they run away from devotion. have some more. Then he wanders further. He goes to the south of India, and then there he gets chased by Shaivas, by Jains, by Kafalikas and so on.
What date is this?
16th century. And so they chase him and they try to kill him. So he runs away and looks for shelter. And then he comes at some place, and this is what happens here. So he looks around and says, this seems like a genuine setting. Let us observe him. So he starts looking at the person. He says, alas, alas, he too is debased. It's a very nice verse. Hum 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 ititi vranishturagira drishtyapyati kruraya durotsaritaloka esha charanavut kshipya duram kshipan nitsna lipta lalata dostatagala grivodaro rakushair divyat panitala sameti tanumandham bhakti mahosmaya. So this ascetic is sitting there, and tivranishturagira vira, a harsh and cruel voice, he's saying hum hum hum, and with a atikruraya, with a very cruel look, duro tsarita loka, the people are kept away from him. He just gives them evil looks, and people don't dare to approach him. And when he walks, charanavut kshipya duram kshipan, he walks and he raises his feet very highly and forward, and kind of walks like that. Mritsna lipta lalata dosa tagala grivo daru rakur. His forehead, his arms, his neck and his throat, his belly and his chest, they're all smeared with mud, and he holds kusha grass in his hand. And then he says, Tanuman Dhamba. He looks like the embodiment of pride, Kim Mahosmaya. Oh, what arrogance. So there he sits meditating, just saying hum hum hum, casting even very cruel looks at the people. When he walks, he raises his feet very highly, and is entirely covered in dirt, and yeah, straight up. Then he comes to a realization and says, oh, this is amazing. Vishnur bhaktim nirupadim rite dharana jnana nishta shastra pasta shrama japatapa karmanam kaushalani shailushanam ivanipunata dikya shiksha vishesha nana kara jatara pitara vartapurti prakara. That without unmotivated devotion for Vishnu, dharana, jnana, two types of meditation, nishta, firmness, Shastra Vyasa, the study of Shastra, there's a mistake, this should be Ashrama. The following ones, Ashrama, Japa, chanting, Tapa, austerity, so expertise in all these things, without devotion, without unmotivated devotion for Vishnu, is like the various forms of an actor, the various roles an actor plays, a very expert actor, someone who's very well trained in his acting. So all these actions without devotion for Vishnu are like the actions of an actor, a very well trained actor. And what does the actor do? He does all these things, but why does he do that? Jatara pitara varta purti prapara. He just does them to fill his own belly. If renunciation says, if you don't have devotion for Vishnu, you may do meditation, you may study Shastra, you may follow your ashrama, you may perform austerity, but the only reason you do it is to fill your own belly. pretty harsh criticism. and you're just like an actor, he says. And then he says, "Oh, Kali, well done, well done. You have brought the entire world under your rule." Utsaritam shamadamadi nigrihya gartham vritti kritam kvachanam tatanarjanaya kamam samulamudamulya tadharma shakhi maitradayas chakimata parami hitavyam. Kali, you have ruled the entire, you've brought the entire world under your rule, and you have driven away Shama and Dhamma, control of the senses, control of the mind, and all these other things. And you have made them Vrittiyakritam, you have made them your servants, Dhanarjanaya, to gather wealth for your own, you've made them your servants so they can enhance your position. You have uprooted the Dharma Shakti, the tree of Dharma. Kimata param ihitavyam, and what should we do now? What can we do now? So renunciation laments like that, and then he hears a voice from the sky that says, in Gaudadesh, in Bengal, the Lord has appeared, and with him all these good qualities have followed him. And he kind of doesn't really believe it. He's like not sure about, is this really true? And then he meets Bhakti Devi, the goddess of devotion, and she just comes from Bengal, and she says, yes, it is true. The Lord has appeared there as Chaitanya, and you know all the friends you're looking for, you know, Shodsham, Satyam, Shamadama, and so on, they're all there, so you shouldn't worry. And she describes Chaitanya's pastimes at great length. And then with renunciation still is kind of wandering, and he asks her, you know, is there shelter now for me who have no shelter? And Bhakti Devi says, certainly. Ananda picha murto vyapi achatata parichinna tadva nitya vilasopi achavairagya shrayo bhagavan. That the Lord, who is Ananda, who is bliss, and murta, he has a form. Vyapi, he's all pervading, chatata parichinna, that he's also hidden. Tadva nitya vilasa, his eternal pastimes. That Lord Bhagavan is vairagyashraya, he's the shelter of renunciation. So don't worry, you will find shelter. This is in the second act, and then renunciation will find shelter in Chaitanya, but in a way that most devotees would not have expected. Two acts later, the fourth act, and describes the scene of one night Chaitanya gathers with all his followers in the house of one of his devotees, and they have kirtan, they chant the names of Krishna very ecstatically, and it goes on the whole night, and everyone is dancing and everyone is chanting, and it's very, very festive, and you know, the descriptions are extremely elaborate. And then at some point the devotees realize that Chaitanya is gone. The dancing has stopped, the kirtan has ended, and the devotees kind of, you know, do their own thing, and then they realize, you know, all of a sudden, where is Chaitanya? You know, he's gone, he's no longer here. So they panic, and they go like, you know, because he's the Lord of their life, their whole life turns around him. So they don't know what to do, and they're panicking, and they kind of say, oh, make sure, one of the more sober persons kind of says, make sure you don't tell anything to his mother, Shachi Devi, who is it's a very interesting character in the drama, actually. She's, it wouldn't surprise me if she's the most respected woman in Sanskrit drama. The way she's glorified and praised, and the role she has in the drama is very, she's very authoritative in the drama, and whatever she says, you know, everyone does. And it's like the respect they show her is incredible. So this sober devotee says, you know, make sure you don't tell anything to her, because if she hears, you know, that Chaitanya is gone, then, you know, what will happen? And maybe he just went away for, you know, a little while, but that is just, you know, figure out what's happening. But they start looking around and they start thinking, well, is anyone else gone? You know, maybe he went with someone to someone else's house. So they start looking around and they realize that there's a few devotees gone. Nityananda is gone, a devotee called Acharya Ratna is gone, and Chaitanya. And so they don't know where they went, and they're kind of looking for him. Then Acharya Ratna comes back, and this is what he says. So they ask him, what happened? And he says, at the end of the night, when the dancing had stopped, he, Chaitanya, took my hand. He walked a few steps, and when he saw Nityananda Dev, he said to him, you too, you also come with me. Together we crossed the Ganga, and then continued walking. I said, Lord, please tell me why we are alone, and where are we going? He ignored me and remained silent. He walked, we followed his steps, and he eventually entered the village named Kartona, where he approached Keshava Bharati, the leader of the sannyasis. At that moment, both Nityananda and I felt very anxious at heart. So in great secret, in the middle of the night, they go to this village and meet this sannyasi there. We thought the Lord desires to take sannyas. The Lord's majesty then overwhelmed us and we were not able to say anything to him. On the next day he said, Acharya Ratna, now you make all the arrangements. I said, what arrangements? Then the Lord told me what to do. When I understood what he meant, I became overwhelmed. I was struck dumb. I could not answer, but began to cry. After that, all the arrangements were automatically made in the right way. Words cannot describe what happened then. So what happened then, I'll try to describe it, is Chaitanya takes sannyas. He gets initiated by Keshava Bharati, and he becomes a sannyasi. Before that, he was a householder. He had married twice. First with his first wife died of a snake bite. Then he married again. He was still very young. He was 24 when he took sannyas. So he renounces everything and takes sannyas. Now, we've seen that Saurabh Damodar was praised for being very renounced, and Sanatana Goswami was praised for being very renounced. Raghunath Das was praised for his renunciation and all that. So you would expect that they say, like, oh, great, you know, Chaitanya took sannyas, this is wonderful. You know, he has such strong renunciation that this is a good thing. They react very differently. this is Acharya Ratna. When he comes back, he's lamenting. Kwasa snigda shama kutila kacha pasha kwasa viti. Where is his dark and thick hair, curly hair, and where is the vidhi, the rule of cutting it all off? You know, he kind of contrasts the two things, before and after. Before he had this long, lushy, beautiful, thick hair, and then now he has no hair at all. Kosashro nibhara, koshivashiva kalpi namavita. Before he had these very nice waistbands, put cloth around his waist, and now the only thing he has is a kalpi. It's like a renunciant cloth. He stands for a moment, he stops for a moment, and starts thinking. That the conviction of those who really of those who see, he kind of corrects himself. He's lamenting that, you know, this is what happened. And alas, you know, he had such beautiful hair, now he has nothing. He had, you know, beautiful clothes, now he just has these renouncer's clothes. And then he kind of stops himself and corrects himself and says, no, but, you know, those who really know, you know, they see that there's no vastu, this is not true. You know, we shouldn't lament about this. Samasta syadharatmani chiti samastamsparati, because it all kind of appears in the Lord, who is the root and the soul of this whole creation. So we shouldn't lament. But still, he keeps lamenting. Tastha kirtanam nitya kautuka kalaha diksamaptim gatas tastha prema vilasaha samadurava chastithano hridi sapritir karuna chasa shiva shiva smritye kashesha bhavat sannyasena tava prabho virachita sarvasva nasho hina. All these the art of enthusiastic dancing in kirtan, alas, alas, that is samaptam gatas, that has now come to an end. Tasta prema vilasaha samadura vacha, the sweet words spoken in jest, kind of the humorous words, the humorous sweet words, prema vilas, which are kind of a play of prema, of devotion, of love for the Lord. Desitano hridi, they now only exist in our heart. No, they're no longer there. And that affection he had for us, and that compassion he had for us, that is now just remaining in our memory. You know, we cannot experience it anymore. Sannyasena tava prabho virachita sarvasva nasho hina. O Lord, by your renunciation, by your taking sannyasa, you have destroyed everything for us, he laments. Yeah, here is Advaita Acharya. He offers a similar kind of feeling. Later on, Chaitanya comes back, and Advaita Acharya, he baits Chaitanya, takes him to the river, he baits him, and he gives him a new cloth to change. And then he kind of says mournfully, Devo chitam cha paridha pitam asti purvam, Bhikshu chitam cha vasanam paridha payami, Lakshmi samatava samascha mukha prasado, ahantano nayanayo, vishamam tadeta. That you used to wear clothes which were fit for a king, but now you wear clothes, now I give you clothes, now I dress you in clothes which are for a monk, a renunciant. Lakshmi sama, the opulence is the same, you know, your opulence is the same. And your grace for us is also the same, but still, for my eyes, for our eyes, you know, this form that you have now as a sannyasi is vishamam, is poison. We don't like it. So there's this great renunciation of Chaitanya is not good. I'll skip some. Yeah, there is also a theological kind of way of dealing with Chaitanya Sannyasa that they try. And there's several ways they do that. One is there's a lot of place. Of course, he takes initiation in the Bharati Sampradaya, in the Bharati school of sannyasis, and he gets the Mahavakya Tattvamasi. That's the Mahavakya he got initiated with. And there's a lot of plays on this Tattvamasi. And this is one, Asmin eva hi bhagavati yatartam abhavan mahavakyam, that when the Lord, when he took sannyas and he got this mantra tattvamasi, then he became the true meaning, he kind of embodied the meaning of tattvamasi. Mukhyarta taya hitaya jahat swarta lakshananatra, that the only thing that when the Lord says tattvamasi, there's only mukhyarta, there's only the direct meaning of the words, you know, you are that, you know, I, you know, Chaitanya is Brahman, is God, basically. So there's only the primary meaning of it. And the Jahat Svarta Alakshana, the secondary meaning, where part of the meaning is kind of
abandoned.
That is not there at all. Whereas, like if you look at the debate on Tattvamasi in Indian philosophy, you have, for example, the followers of Madhva, they criticize Shankara for using this Jahat Svarta Alakshana to interpret this, but they're saying, you know, this tattvamasi applies perfectly to Chaitanya. Another way of doing it is by kind of looking at others. Ramasya vipinavasa, Rama lived in the forest, Krishna sya cha maturam gamanam, and Krishna went to Mathura Tasya cha sannyasa vidis. And for him, for Chaitanya, there's taking of sannyas. Tritiyam matra trayasya sholhavyam. And the three mothers of them, you know, Yashoda, Kaushalya, and Shachi Devi, the mother of Chaitanya, they have to tolerate this. So we see a parallel in all three avatars. And then there's this verse which, from the Vishnu Sahasranam, which occurs in several places in the drama. Sanyasa kucha mashanto, sorry, that's the wrong S. Nishta shanti parayana. It's a describing of Vishnu, who sannyasa krit, he takes sannyas. So they see this as a prediction of Chaitanya. And this renunciation of Chaitanya becomes a very important aspect. There's other verses in the Bhagavatam that are read as referring to Chaitanya because it mentions sannyasa. Now, Gopinath Acharya, I think, he summarizes the feelings of all of them most expertly. He says, Yakevalam premarasastadasit. Formerly, there was just premarasa. There was only the sentiments of love of God. Saeva vairagya rasena mishra. But now they're mixed with the sentiments of renunciation. Swadasatapyesha drishostataiva. Chitta. And although we still taste it, we still taste both. With our eyes, you know, we see both the sweetness of the prema rasa and the vairagya rasa when we look at you. Chitasya noyam maduramna rupa. In our heart, we experience this form as mixed sweetness and bitter, and the sweetness of Krishna bhakti is there, and the bitterness of renunciation is there. So, although we see both sweetnesses, our heart, you know, our heart experiences. And skip this one. There's the last person we'll look about is his attitude towards Chaitanya's renunciation. It's very different from all the others that we've seen so far. It's Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He's a very famous Nayayika. He lives in Puri, and Chaitanya goes after he takes sannyas. He goes to Puri, and then meets Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya there. Now, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is a very well-respected scholar, and he likes renunciation, as we'll see. His brother-in-law is Gopinathacharya. We've seen him earlier, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked Gopinatha, "Well, who is this? Who is this person?" He said, "Well, he's Chaitanya." He asked, "Well, but can you give me something about his background? You know, what was he in his previous ashram? Now he's a sannyasi, but what was he before?" He says, "Oh, he's related to Nilambara Chakravarti, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is also somehow related to that person." So then Sarvabhauma says, "Acharya, seeing him, I tremble with affection and grief because of his relationship with Nilambara Chakravarti. He's an object of affection for us." Because Sarvabhauma is much older, and he's kind of more of the generation of Nilambara Chakravarti. If I remember correctly, they were in the same school together or something like that, with the same teacher. So, you know, because he's so young, he's only, you know, in his early 20s, you know, therefore, and because I'm somehow related to him, I have affection for him. But why has he accepted the fourth ashram at such an early age? Who has taught him the Mahavakya? So he's wondering, you know, why does this person take sannyas so early? And then Gopinath says, "Well, Kesha Bharati gave him the Mahavakya." And then Sarvabhauma says, "Oh, why did he take initiation into the Bharati school?" The Bharati school is kind of considered a bit lower. It's not the best school of sannyasis. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, from this, we kind of get that, you know, renunciation is good, but then why did he take in the Bharati? You know, kind of, it's not so good. So then Gopinath says, "Oh, he did not consider such externals. He only cared for renunciation, like we saw with Surab Damodar. And he said that he took sannyas because of his power of his renunciation, and he didn't care about, you know, teaching Vedanta or something like that. He just took sannyas." And then Sarvabhauma, "What exactly is external?" Gopinath, "Such things as the excellence of Sampradaya." Where if you say, "Well, this Sampradaya is better than this one," it's just external, Gopinath says. And Sarvabhauma said, that is not correct. This plunder of one's ashram is not external. How can you say that? It's important, you know. And Gopinath says, to accept sannyasa merely for respect, that is external. Sarvabhauma, what is wrong with respect? I say that having accepted the renouncer's cloth from a monk of a better school, you know, if one has done that, and then that is perfected by hearing Vedanta. And other biographies bring this out stronger, that that what Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wants to do is teach Chaitanya Vedanta and kind of bring him up higher and kind of get him more fixed in renunciation. And Gopinatha, who is a devotee of Chaitanya, he gets angry and he says, Bhattacharya, you do not know his greatness, but I infer from everything I have seen that he is God himself. So here we see this kind of different attitudes towards Chaitanya's renunciation. Gopinatha, we saw earlier, he describes that, you know, for him to see Chaitanya as a sannyasi is both madhuramna, it is sweet and bitter at the same time. But still, you know, he kind of, for him, Chaitanya is God himself. So he kind of, you know, he lives with it. And then here comes Sarvabhauma, and he says, you know, he likes the fact that he took sannyas. He likes the fact that he's a sannyasi. But, you know, his grief, like if you go back, he says, you know, I tremble with affection and grief. His affection is because of family affection. His grief, as it comes out later, is not the fact that he took sannyas, but the fact that he took sannyas in a Bharati school, in a lower school. So their renunciation is good, but you kind of have to take the right renunciation, basically. Later on, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya converts and becomes a follower of Chaitanya, and then he has this very famous verse. Vairagya vidyanija bhakti yoga shikshartha mekha purusha purana Shri Krishna Chaitanya sharira dhari kripam bhuriryastam aham prapadye. That I bow down to that ocean of mercy who is ekha purusha purana, who is a unique person and an eternal person, like very old person. You know, he's basically God, he's saying. Shikshartam, and he has come to teach Vairagya, renunciation, Vidya, knowledge, Nija Bhakti Yoga, and devotion for himself. In the light of what we've just read, and this line kind of gets a different meaning, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari, and he has the body of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. You know, earlier he was not very satisfied with the fact that Chaitanya took initiation into the Bharati school. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, that's Chaitanya's sannyas title. That's a title, Chaitanya is a name from the Bharati school. So here he kind of seems to have kind of, you know, come at peace with the fact that he took initiation in the Bharati school. He says, yes, and you know, he's this person, he's come here to teach Vairagya and Vidya and Bhakti. And yes, he's a member of the Bharati school. You know, he's Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and I don't have a problem with that. So here he kind of pacifies with it. just to end then, what we basically see in the drama is that renunciation is seen as a very good thing. It's something that assists devotion. There's one verse, I didn't put it here, where Chaitanya says that, or Nityananda describes Chaitanya just after he's taken sannyas, and he says that the fire of his renunciation has melted his devotion, his love of God, and you know, it's kind of started melting and it pours out everywhere. So because he's renounced, he kind of I'll go back one more. Actually, this is a nice verse. This is Lord Chaitanya saying himself why he took sannyas. He kind of says, "Vinasarvatyagam bhavati bhajanam nahya supate." Without renouncing everything, how can you know? There is no worship of the Lord of our life. And you know, thinking that iti tyago smabhi krutaiha, I've taken renunciation here. I've taken sannyas. Kima dvaita katya? What is the use of speaking about, you know, advaita? Because Advaitacharya was asking, why did you take initiation into an Advaita line? And he says, you know, well, what's the point of arguing about that? I just wanted to renounce. That's why I did it. I am dando puyan prabalatara so manasa pashur. And this danda I have, this stick I have, And that's just to control the beast of my mind, which is very, very, it's hard to control. So therefore I've taken the stick so I can control my mind. Itivaham dandagrahanam. Therefore I've taken this dhamma. So that's his kind of explanation. So we see here, renunciation aids devotion. It is kind of something that helps in devotion. And we saw that also with Swarup Damodar and Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami. It's all like devotion assists or is strengthened by renunciation. But at the same time, renunciation is kind of the fruit of devotion also. And with Chaitanya, when he takes sannyas, this whole thing gets taken to another level. And there they see this, they kind of have this philosophical understanding, yes, this is all good and all that, but still, we don't like the fact that you took sannyas. It's kind of this troubles us. We don't mind if Swarup Damodar takes sannyas, or if, Raghunath Das is renounced, but why you? Why Chaitanya? And the reason there is, it's a more theological point, that Chaitanya is God himself, according to the text. All the characters in the text see him as such, and they have a particular relationship with that person. And then when he takes sannyas, that relation is kind of cut off, and then you get this disruption, and they don't know how to relate to this person now anymore. And you see, especially when he takes sannyas, all these expressions are there later on in the drama. You find very little of it. It's kind of just the initial shock, very strong. But perhaps I'm going over time. We'll end with Shachi Devi, the mother of Chaitanya. She has a very different attitude to Chaitanya's sannyasa. In the beginning of the fourth act, there's a scene where Shachi Devi sees Chaitanya worshipping Keshava Bharati. It's before he took sannyas. And she sees Chaitanya worshipping Keshava Bharati, and she asks him, why is he worshipping this sannyasi? What is he doing? And this person says, well, I don't know, but he's been showing a lot of devotion for Keshava Bharati over the last few days. And Shachi Devi is kind of worried, and she calls Chaitanya over, and she says, why are you worshipping this person? And he says, he's a great personality, we should offer him respect, what's wrong with that? Now, Shachi Devi, Chaitanya is a Romney's son. Before that, she had another son called Vishwarup, and he took sannyas at a very early age, left the house and ran off, and she's kind of afraid that this will happen also with Chaitanya, that she will lose her only son. Her husband passed away, so she's a widow, and her only son is Chaitanya. That's her life, and she's like worried that Chaitanya will run away. It's kind of something similar to Shankara, basically. You also have that story there. The Shankara wants to take sannyas, and his mother is kind of keeping him from doing it. So she's worried that this will happen, but he kind of assures her and says, no, you shouldn't worry, because he kind of goes the theological tour, and he says, well, Krishna is Krishna is your mother, Krishna is your father, Krishna is your son, Krishna is your child. You're surrounded by Krishna, Krishna supports you. So if I take sannyas, that's okay, because the Lord supports everyone, so you shouldn't worry about anything. And then she has this thing, she says, no, but you are my Krishna. I cannot lose you, because you are my Krishna. It's kind of a theological point that's made also, because according to the drama, yes, Chaitanya is also Krishna, but for her it's this other feeling too, but for me you are Krishna, and that's all I have. So then Chaitanya takes sannyas, and he goes back to Advaita Acharya's home, and then they bring Shachi Devi, they bring his mother there, and she has this verse, and it's very sweet, so we'll end on that note. And she says, Vairagyam eva tava kim kimuvanu bhutir. So, have you now taken renunciation? Have you now renounced everything? Kimuvanu bhutir. Have you now attained anubhuti, which is a kind of complete perception of everything? Bhaktir nuvakim. Bhaktir nuvaki murasa paramam tanubhit. Have you achieved bhakti? Have you achieved devotion? now that you've taken sannyas, or have you become the embodiment of rasa, of devotional sentiments for Krishna? So that may all be, but then tatastanam dhyatayaiva bhavantam ikshe dabdho dhunapi nakadapi punastajami. But still, you know, you may be a sannyasin, you may be all that, and you may have achieved renunciation, you may have achieved anubhuti, you may have achieved bhakti, you may be the embodiment of rasa, but still, when I see you, then, you know, I see you as a child who's sucking my breast, and you know, I see you as a baby. So, labdho dhunapi. So, now I finally have attained you again. I have you now again. Nakadapi punastajami. And I will not let you go. That's her attitude. We don't care about renunciation. You're my child. I will not let you go. That's it.
I just want to ask a quick question because I have to run, but that's extremely interesting to me. The bittersweet feeling seems, and the renunciation element seems quite familiar from studying images of Radha, which are also very bittersweet, and where this trope of renunciation is mentioned again and again in her suffering. And that feeling you get where everyone's mourning her suffering, everyone's mourning the, you know, the pain, the physical suffering. In fact, you almost feel like there's a little trick being played on the reader, where there's so much mourning in such vivid and descriptive terms that it's almost magnifying the suffering. I mean, it's not necessarily actually a negative judgment on asceticism. It's a way of getting people into the extreme experience of that, so that so much of it's on the imaginal realm, not just an actual description of what should happen or what people actually think. And especially where it's not just anyone, it's the person who you worship, so that you can... I'm assuming that not everyone is supposed to actually go and become an ascetic after all these positive talk about it, but it's a play, it's not a theological treatise, and the whole point is that through this wonderful discussion you can imaginally achieve it. Do you think... I mean, does that seem right, that to some extent that negative with regard to Chaitanya is also a kind of a positive in that way? Or does it sound crazy?
Yeah, I think there's something of that in there. But I wouldn't deny the kind of negativity. I mean, that's definitely there. You cannot just kind of brush it aside. But the parallel with Radha is interesting, because before Chaitanya takes sannyas, they have this kirtan and there's this dancing going on. And if you read the text, it kind of seems that Kavikarnapur does it kind of on purpose to compare it a bit to the rasa dance, where Krishna dances with the gopis and then disappears. And, you know, it's the middle of the night, he disappears, and everyone goes, you know, where did he go? And then, you know, they notice, well, it's not him that is gone, but it's someone else that is gone too, which is Radha. It's Radha and Krishna are gone. So here you kind of have something similar. You know, it's Chaitanya is dancing and chanting and singing with his associates, and then all of a sudden he disappears, and everyone kind of goes, where did he go? And it's as with the gopis, you know, the followers of Chaitanya too, they kind of collapse and they're like, you know, what happened, what happened? And they're looking for him, like the gopis are looking for Krishna. So, I mean, it's an interesting parallel that's there. Also, Kavikarnapur has these verses where he describes Chaitanya as taking on that mood. He's Krishna himself, but then he takes on the mood of the gopis, and specifically Radha. So that's also there in him.
Can I turn this off?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, not there. Just on top, there's a button on, off. And another time. Just one. Yeah, okay, it will stop.
In a few seconds. This is what the noise is. Yeah. I was, but the thing that's feeling towards renunciation, I was really intrigued by that configuration of devotion and renunciation together. And I thought the mixed feelings about renunciation came through very well in that play that you were describing. many of different
feelings
about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, with Chaitanya taking sannyas, we kind of have the perhaps the more like you have in non-renunciate traditions, you know, it's like, although, like in traditional Indian society, sannyas is considered something good, but when the son says, I want to take sannyas, then the parents kind of go, no, not you, you know, but sannyas is very good, but, you know, you should take it. So that's what kind of comes out with Chaitanya also. You know, he takes sannyas, and they say, yes, sannyas is good, but, you know, why does it have to be you? You know, just let Surya Damodar be a sannyasi, and that's fine, but, you know, you don't have to do it. We kind of get to, like I briefly alluded to that, this is not considered to be something that they kind of, you know, fall down or something, kind of lower their standards and become an illusion or something like that. That, you know, first they realize, yes, sannyas is good. And then when Chaitanya takes sannyas, all of a sudden they're an illusion and they kind of say, well, sannyas is bad, you know, you shouldn't do it. But, you know, according to Kavi Karnapur and the Chaitanya tradition, it's kind of, they get to, their love for Chaitanya is so great, their devotion for Chaitanya is so great, that they become kind of covered, and they become somewhat an illusion, you could say. But that illusion is very exalted and very different from the illusion that the common people, that the common man or woman experiences. So you kind of, you know, you kind of get out of illusion and, you know, come to knowledge and then fall back in a different type of illusion where you kind of don't see the theological or philosophical significance of sannyas, but you just see, you know, I have a relationship with this person takes sannyas, and therefore, you know, all the relationships I have with that person or I had with that person are now totally changed. Like, if you go back, Acharya Ratna, he's here. Dastakirtan and Nityakautukakala. You know, last the expertise in dancing in kirtan that Chaitanya used to do is now come to an end. So sannyasi is not supposed to dance. We find that in biographies described when Chaitanya goes to Benares, that's what he's doing there. He's chanting and dancing the whole time. And the sannyasis there of Benares, they criticize him. They say, what are you doing? You're just a sentimental person. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a sannyasi. You should study Vedanta. Why are you dancing? It's not expected of a sannyasi. So they, of course, Chaitanya keeps doing it. But when they just hear that he's taken sannyas, that's kind of what they what they think. You know, it's like, he's taken sannyas. We used to dance with him in kirtan, and now that's gone. You know, we won't have this anymore. The relationships we have with him will be totally changed because he's now a sannyasi. So their sense of love kind of overpowers, you know, whatever philosophical concerns they might have, and they just throw them out, and it's just, you know, just me. And like Advaita Acharya, he has this verse. I don't know if I read it actually. So hamta eta sabhavan cha chaisham premata veyam karuna apisaiva. You are here, and I am here, and everyone is here, all the associates are here, you know, we're all still the same people. Premata taveyam, you know, your love for Krishna is still there, there's nothing changed. Karunapisaiva, and your compassion for us is also still there, nothing has changed. Sarvamta devasti sukhaika hetur, and everything, you know, is just like it was before, and that's the source of our happiness. But then he says, you know, anyadrisham rupamatosha hetu, that, you know, this different form that you have, that's the only thing that changed. You have this different form, and that is the source of our atosha, of our dissatisfaction. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like everything is still the same. You're there, and I'm here. You know, I'm Advaita Acharya, you're Chaitanya. Nothing has changed, but your form has changed, and that we don't like. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the relationship has changed.
Kind of question, just a little. When it happens with the gopis, say, where they lose Krishna, when it happens with Radha, you get the metaphysics coming through, where you can see there's a kind of a Shakti Prakriti link, where that's okay, because once you've emptied the world out of you through renunciation and filled yourself back up with Krishna, that's great, because then you're doing what the renunciants did. They were looking for Brahman everywhere. Well, that's great, because Radha's and the gopis see him everywhere. In fact, they see Krishna in the flowers, and they think the bees are Krishna. And you know what I mean? They have that Maya, through Maya we see Krishna thing. So it also has this metaphysical truth in it, that they have achieved enlightenment in terms of seeing the true nature of what's real and where God is. But here it seems mostly about the discipline of renunciation. It doesn't seem very metaphysical. It's much more just, this will help to hone his great level of affection. Is that right?
This will help too.
That's right.
You said this will help too.
To help sort of hone your love into a sharper, deeper, a stronger fire, but it's not that it has this link with seeing the true nature of reality that way. Is that right? Or?
Yeah. I mean, there's several verses in there for Kavi Kanyapur is very much, for his theology, is basically a Bhagavatam person. Mm-hmm. He takes everything from the Bhagavata Purana. His guru has this quite radical statement, actually, if you really think about it. He says Chaitanya had five teachings. That's what Kavi Kanyapur's guru says. And the fourth one is Shastram Bhagavatam Pramana Mamalam. That the Shastra Bhagavatam, the scripture Bhagavatam, that's the Pramana Mamalam, that's the spotless Pramana. So that's, you know, everything that's in the Bhagavata, that's, you know, you cannot argue about it. And, you know, we don't care about, Pramana is like Pratyaksha Anuman, that's generally the Pramana Shabda and so on. They only are, you know, valid insofar as they kind of support the Bhagavatam. That's basically his thing. So if you look at the Bhagavata, there you have a lot of verses there say that renunciation doesn't have to be done separately, but it kind of, if you perform bhakti, then jnana and vairagya automatically come. So it's kind of something, you perform bhakti and then you get jnana, then you get vairagya, and then those two things kind of support that, become kind of enhance that and bring it higher. But it's basically, you know, from the Bhagavata's perspective, it's just the devotion itself that enhances itself, if you wish, because the devotion brings jnana and vairagya, and that kind of pushes it higher.
Isn't that the opposite of what Jessica suggested, in the sense that there you've got bhakti as a kind of knowing, as a kind of, so it's love is a kind of knowledge, is a form of knowledge, rather than knowledge resulting out of love, as it were. It's the love in itself, which is the end, which is also the form of knowledge, rather than a means or a method of gaining knowledge.
But with the gopis, you know, they had love for Krishna, and then, you know, by their love, they kind of, I mean, they didn't study, you know, any shastra or something, and then to kind of, when they started looking for Krishna, you know, they might have been doing the same thing as, you know, a jnani was doing or something like that. But they didn't study for that, it kind of came automatically. So the jnana is kind of a fruit of their devotion, and their renunciation too. They can leave their husbands, they can leave their families, you know, but why? Because they have bhakti, they have devotion, and it's kind of, they don't have to cultivate this vairagya separately, but they can just, you know, when they hear Krishna's flute, they can just run up and do it.
Doesn't Ramanuja also say that when you have bhakti, then you can automatically use yourself, jnana, karma, everything, bhakti, elevates you.
It seems quite gendered to me in some ways. The men are more explicitly renunciants, and they have the discipline, but the metaphysical realization can sort of float away a little bit somewhere, whereas the women don't actually explicitly have the renunciation, but they are able to see directly Krishna everywhere, and this, you know, as the gopis do at the end of the Rasa dance.
When they have taken the right path.
Yeah.
I mean, but they also renounce. They renounce their families, and they do the same as a sannyasi. Basically, they leave the family, they leave the home, and they wander through the forest of Vrindavan.
Yeah. They're called sannyasis from time to time in the text, aren't they? Yeah. Or better than. Yeah.
But they do it secretly.
Yes, they don't get it.
Eventually,
I was just curious about you were saying how this dilemma between renunciation and devotion, and how renunciation helps in the devotion, but at the same time, the fruit of devotion is renunciation. And so, I'm just curious how this works.
It seems like a contradiction.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the characters in the Chaitanya Chandradaya, you have there's like Raghunath Das. He performs extreme austerity. You know, he's very renounced, and he kind of actively pursues, you know, in some sense does that. And Chaitanya too, he kind of takes sannyas, and kind of like he says in to Advaita Acharya in that verse that I read, he says that you know, unless one renounces everything, then you know there's no question of worshipping Krishna. You just cannot do it, so you have to renounce it. So, you know, I was thinking like that, so therefore I took sannyas, therefore I renounced everything. So there's some renunciation, it seems, needed, but then you kind of have the other path too, which kind of says that, you find this in the Bhagavatam many places, you know, it's just like, you know, it says the gopis got it through you know, passionate love for Krishna. Shishupal got it through hate, or Kamsa, you know, from fear, and so on. And you get these different relationships. You know, the young boys in Vrindavan, they got it through friendship with Krishna. They kind of achieved perfection in that. So they just have an emotional relationship with Krishna. And then from that, you get, you know, if their emotions are right, and if their emotions link them with Krishna, then, you know, all these other things come separately. Kind of come automatically. So I think you kind of have both ways. You can do it separately as a support for cultivating devotion. But if you have devotion, then it just comes naturally. Like when Chaitanya says, you know, that if one renounces, if one doesn't renounce everything, then one cannot worship Krishna. He's basically saying, you know. You know, I don't have devotion yet. You know, I want to have devotion, so I want to worship Krishna. But, you know, in order to do that, I have to renounce everything first. Whereas you get someone like the gopis or something, or Shishupal or Kamsa, and they have an emotional relationship with Krishna. So they're, that is established. And then all the other things kind of come naturally. That's how you could see it.
One more question, and then we should call.
Yeah, it was a practical one. I was wondering if there was, for this author, for the tradition in general, that particular treatise or the various treatises which kind of like, you know, spell out really the nitty gritty aspect of renunciation, or it's kind of like it's generally assumed and always transmitted from Acharya to the person that's in that.
Yeah, and there is, the text describes that. Chaitanya's older brother Visharupa, you know, he took sannyas before Chaitanya was born, and it says that at some point he approached Shachidev, he approached his mother and said, you know, here you have this book, you keep this, and when my brother is born, you give him that book,
yeah.
Or when he's old enough to kind of be able to read and comprehend it, you give him this book. And his you know, Shachidev, she didn't know what the book was, but she kept it and kind of kept it in a nice place in the box, like we reclining the thing in a box. So she kept it nicely, and then Vishrup takes sannyas, and he's gone, and then she wasn't happy with that, and then she realizes, well, maybe that book has something to do with this, you know, the fact that he took sannyas. So maybe it's kind of, this book will encourage, you know, she couldn't read it or something, but maybe this book will kind of, you know, if I give this to my next son, maybe he, you know, by reading this book, will decide to renounce everything too. So she takes the books and immediately burns it, destroys the book. But we don't know what the book was, unfortunately. But there is not really any. Maybe that was something like that, that there is not really any text. I mean, he takes. It's an interesting thing. You know, both Swarup Damodar, who is a sannyasi. I mean, you get, like, if you look at the sannyasis in the work, you have, you know, Paramananda, he's a Puri. So you have a Puri sannyasi, you have Brahmananda Bharati. And then you have these two others, Swarup Damodar and Chaitanya. You also have Nityananda, who's kind of a, he's kind of implicitly identified as a sannyasi, but the way he dresses is not very like a sannyasi. He has very rich cloth and jewels and, you know, earrings and things like that. But somehow he's kind of seen as a sannyasi in the text. And later on he gets married. So he's kind of a separate category. But then you have Swarup Damodar and Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Now both of them, they're initiated into one of these, you know, Dashanami orders, but they don't get the title. Chaitanya is apparently a brahmachari title of that order. And Swarup also is also a brahmachari title. And so they kind of take initiation into that line, but somehow, I don't know exactly how it works, but it seems like it's not complete. And why they don't do it entirely, why don't they take the title? And why is it not, you know, Krishna Bharati or something like that, but Krishna Chaitanya? So it seems there's, you know, perhaps, and if you look at, you know, the way they live, it's not very like sannyasi. You know, they're dancing and you know, singing in kirtan and feasting. You know, they have these, it describes that the king of Orissa, he's in Puri, and he sees the followers of Chaitanya arrive. They come to pilgrimage in Puri, and some of them are very renounced persons, some of them are sannyasis and so on. And you know, normally you come to a place of pilgrimage and the first day you fast, you know, you do something, you take a bath and you fast and things like that. And there, you know, the king is standing on the roof of his palace and he sees all these people arriving in Puri. And what they do, they go straight to where Chaitanya is staying, and there they have this huge feast and they just eat. And he's kind of looking at that and he's thinking, what is this, you know? And he's talking to, I forget if it's either Gopinath or Sarvabhauma, and he's kind of talking to it, and he said, but what is this, you know? Shouldn't they follow the rituals? You know, this is not correct, and, you know, there's sannyasis there, and what are they doing? Just eating it. And then, you know, I think it's Gopinath. And he said, no, but you don't understand, you know, they're kind of, they're beyond that. They can do it because they're, you know, they're with God, they're with the Lord, so they can do it. So there's this conception that
there is no institutionalized.
So
if you want to become a sannyasi, there is no hard and fast thing that you can't dance.
Yeah,
it's just
in a stage, as it were.
Yeah, because there were obviously external signs like the Danda,
the
and also, I mean, all the internal practice for renunciation, Shama, Dhamma, Tikisho, all these were there, these two some people you look at, so that's also kind of very typical of
he has the Danda and he has the cloth, and, you know, he gets the, you know, he gets his Mahavakya Tathamasi, but there's, you know, there's no description that he's actually meditating on or, you know, contemplating on that or anything. He just gets it, and then the other persons, they kind of comment on it, yeah, this is true, because he has gotten the tattva, this tattvanasi Mahavakya, and therefore there's only Mukhyarta and no Lakshana, but that's all you have. So I mean, it seems it's somewhat of more of an external consideration, like Swarup Damodar was described, and Sanatana Goswami, they renounce, but it's kind of externally they look like a sannyasi or a renounced person, but that's not so important, because really what's important is what's in the internal.
Thanks, Frank. We should
hold
up there. Thanks very much. Very interesting talk.
No. Yeah, I think there's S.K. Day, he criticizes the state for us.